Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people...
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
When your business value is wrapped up in your client list, what's the most important thing you can do to drive the value of your business? We asked expert Stacy McKibben.
If you don't have really strong, you know, client relation management tools, CRMs as they're lovingly referred to, if you don't have tools like that in your business, it's going to be very difficult to transition it over. As a matter of fact, your next buyer is going to use that as a reason to drive down your sale price. Absolutely, one of the biggest areas of opportunity that we see in professional services businesses are going back to your existing and previous clients. Oftentimes we just forget that they don't necessarily know the full breadth of services that we provide and how they can use us or even refer us to their friends and family. So that is a big win in most businesses, is just starting there. And it's very difficult to do if you don't have a good system in place with which to do it.
One of the most common ways a business is sold is through something called an earnout. And we asked for information and an example from business broker Chris Bond.
What buyers want to have happen is they want a seller to prove the actual value of the business by having them be patient and waiting for a piece of the payout. So in other words, once the transition period has happened, say 6, 12, 18, or 24 months, the buyer will make additional payments with the comfort that, okay, it is what you said it is. Had a very creative deal earlier this year where down payment was made for about 80% of the deal. A bank stepped in for a percentage of the deal. The seller actually financed another small percentage of the deal. And the earnout comes in years 3, 4, and 5. So everybody's pulling in the same direction, making sure the first 2 years go very smoothly.
What are some of the challenges for leaders in this knowledge-based economy? Here's CEO Coach Bill Anton.
The person that has the most influence over the entire organization is the person that leads the organization. And transforming that person exponentially influences change. My training as a psychologist, my understanding about the kinds of organizations that are going to be successful in the future are going to be organizations that realize that knowledge is their product and that knowledge can only be created by enrollment, not by compliance. And so the task of the leader of the future is to transform the people that work in the organization so that they want to give their best and so that they're willing to offer ideas and perspectives that create knowledge and innovation for the organization.
Medical insurance is a big part of your budget. How do you contain those costs? We ask benefits expert Rhett Bray.
We'll talk about wellness, is how we can start to communicate the importance of the wellness, and that we give the people and the employees the opportunities to do things that will help them to become healthier. We start to educate them on the importance of annual physicals. We start to educate them on preventative care. Women do this quite well. Men have a tendency to wait till body parts don't work and then they go, which can be late. And it's interesting, we take better care of our car. We change the oil. We see the lamp light comes on, and for a lot of us, we don't do the maintenance that we should do on a regular basis. That will identify a lot of issues that people have that now you can start to address, either through medication, through exercise or diet. There are just a few key areas that you can identify that will drive these higher costs.
Okay, so we've heard the term before, treat your business like an investment. It'll be a lot easier to sell down the road. What exactly does that mean? We asked an expert, Don Berzin.
Many of us in the field encourage owners to look at their business as an investment. Some owners understand that concept, but many do not. I mean, for a number of them, they see their business as either a job, a cash machine, a passion, or an extension of who they are. And the term investment sounds a little too removed for them to relate to. And we also let it be known that a business is actually easier to sell when it has a passive ownership. I mean, an owner who is not personally critical to maintaining future cash flows. But let's face it, I mean, one of the last terms that ever come to mind when we think about most entrepreneurs is passive. You know, these people are doers, they make things happen, and sitting on the sidelines is not something that many of them want to do at any stage of their career.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Why would you have a revocable living trust instead of a will? Here's attorney Matt Amaro.
One of the main reasons that you would consider doing a revocable trust versus just having a will is avoiding what we would call a probate process, which is a court proceeding to distribute a family estate, which can be very expensive and legal fees, court fees, and just involves a lot of court involvement that can be pretty painful. So by using a trust, you can get out of that. Now, if your assets aren't high enough, that's one way you may be able to avoid probate without a trust. And the other way is you may have assets that are able to pass to beneficiaries outside of a trust and outside of probate, even if you don't have a trust. But when you have real property, you usually won't be able to avail yourself of those two exceptions to staying out of probate.
How do most people decide it's time to start exit planning, and what's on their mind when they do? Here's Jim Immel.
Long-term is really interesting. I use the analogy of the light switch. Sometimes these business owners don't think about it, and then all of a sudden they wake up one day and they just want to turn the light switch off, and they go from being passionate 100% into the game, and then all of a sudden something starts feeling heavy. Maybe it's a personal situation that's happened, but they literally turn the light switch off. Most of the people that you and I work with, it's more like a dimmer switch. They just don't do it that quick. They do it over time. But what really a lot of them are thinking about is, how do I transition myself out of the leadership position, provide other people opportunity to get into that leadership position, so the business is being prepared to transition from a position of strength and not weakness.
People are nervous about stocks and bonds these days. What's the outlook for income real estate? We asked real estate expert Scott Tamkin.
I'm a firm believer that income property will grow wealth over time. And there are parts of Los Angeles where income property is still affordable. The west side of LA doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but there are parts of LA where there are still opportunities. And I firmly believe that, particularly in some of the outlying areas, the gentrification will continue and people will want to rent in those areas, particularly as public transportation expands. People have some extra money. They're looking to invest in income property. I would say good strategy might be to join up with others who are doing the same. There are some crowdfunding sites that offer some opportunities to do that, but I would be careful just jumping in and talk to an expert in the multifamily business. I think over time it will prove to be lucrative.
Protecting your assets is important, but when you do it is even more important. Here's attorney Harry Barth.
A very important component to understand is that, as with all business deals, asset protection being just one of them, is to be able to settle a proposed claim within reasonable limits. It's very, very difficult to do that if you're in jeopardy of losing your home, losing your business, and losing your life savings. So I think that it's important that asset protection is granular. We look at the various components, we take into consideration all of the goals and objectives of our particular clients, and there's not one size fits all. Every situation is different, every background is different, every family makeup is different, every business transaction is different.
What's the best way to use Twitter and other social media? We asked expert Tim Templeton.
I just had a friend ask me today, I don't really get Twitter. What is the value? And I said, you know, it's two things. It's self-promotion, or business promotion in this case, and it's research. So if you want people to know who you are and what you're doing, and you create content, you create blog content, you want people to see it, one of the best ways to get it out in front of people is to send out an announcement using Twitter. Likewise, if you're trying to find people in your ecosystem, your business, the analysts, the resellers, the potential partners, you can find them by their activity on Twitter. You can interact with them, you can follow them, you can retweet things that they're sending, and you can create a relationship that way, which is a lot easier than it used to be.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
Of all the things that can happen on the way to the sale of your business, having a deal fall apart because of sloppy financials is probably the worst. Here's expert Addison Adams.
In the sale of a company, you are in a very cooperative process with the other side. If you're the seller of the business and the buyer is coming in and evaluating whether to buy your business, there needs to be a high level of trust there. A trust that you are not only being open and honest about your business and what you know about it, but also credibility that you know what you're talking about. And that when you hand over your financial statements, for example, they're clean, they're correct, they're complete, and they're not misleading. Preferably they're audited, and not only currently audited, but going back several years. And this is so that there is a confidence that comes in from the point of view of the buyer.
You're the trustee of your company's 401k or profit sharing plan. You have certain responsibilities. What can happen when things go wrong? We ask Buck Blanton.
We have a responsibility when we run qualified plans as a business owner, or in that world we call it a plan sponsor. That person has a responsibility of due care and due loyalty to the participant. And sometimes we forget that when we run plans and we do other things. But as you said, those breaches can become kind of onerous. The 2013 audit year, there were 3,566 audits performed by the Department of Labor, and more than $2.7 billion with a B dollars in fines and penalties were levied. All of those things can be done and levied against corporate officers personally. It's not your corporate seat that might get sued or levied. It's going to be you personally.
What are some of the biggest challenges facing family businesses in their management transition? We ask Transition Consulting Group's David and Paul Karofsky for their thoughts regarding this topic.
As the baby boomers are coming of age and getting a little bit older, as the next generation is starting to get a little bit older and come into that leadership position, this transfer of not only monetary wealth, but you're talking about the businesses, the assets, whatever it might be, there needs to be a plan to transfer that seamlessly. To my dad's point, the more planning you do and you talk about it as to what that transition of ownership looks like, what is that transition of leadership? Those two are not the same. They can be similar in tie, but they can be mutually exclusive as well. But until you really have a plan as to how you transfer that business from one generation to the next, it's very difficult to do it.
When a parent passes away, sometimes dealing with mom or dad's effects can be challenging. Here's senior real estate expert Allison Whitaker.
There's different levels of sorting through things, and so we work with organizers and professional inventory people, estate sale planners. Basically, they come in and they will help you sort, is this a donation pile? Is this a for sale pile? Are these items things that we need to send off to our auction house in London to get appraised and actually auction off? There's different auction houses as well, not just Sotheby's, if it's sports memorabilia, you know, that we would recommend using. There's also that element of, is it a good time to sell the house when it comes to taxes? Taxes are a whole other conversation, and a lot of times people think, well, the market's up, we should just sell the house, but there could be some tax ramifications depending upon the way the estate has been set up, that maybe it's better to rent it out for a couple years.
How would an attorney specializing in professionals handle a case differently? We asked Miranda McCroskey.
A young man came to me with an allegation of a hit and run, and he was looking at jail time. Going to jail was going to be a big problem for a lot of reasons. So I provided the district attorney with all the mitigating factors, all the factors that they could consider in determining his sentence. And I stressed to the DA the consequences of the criminal conviction on this young man. And the benefit is he was able to do a diversion program, which means avoiding the conviction entirely. The less obvious benefit was that he avoided the criminal conviction that would have affected his path because he wanted to be a physical therapist. From the application process to the physical therapy board through the renewals that each board has, he would have had to bring that conviction up year after year and discuss that. And so he got to avoid all of that.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
With all the social media platforms to choose from, why has YouTube become so popular? We asked Joan Pounds.
The younger generations do a lot more visually, so a lot of times your YouTube videos and things like that are better ways to reach out to them. I found out through my son, actually, who's a teenager, that YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world. And I never even thought about going to YouTube to find out how to do something. And the beauty about YouTube is We can create our own videos right now from our phones and upload them to YouTube. And the neat thing about that is you're creating your own celebrity during that time. People buy from those they know, like, and trust. And that's one way for people to reach out, begin to know you and to like you and to trust you.
Family businesses can be very challenging sometimes. Here's Roseanne Levy from the Roark Group.
What I tell people is think about your family and think about working with them. We addressed many issues of families who work together and really helped them resolve them. What are they dealing with? What are their major issues? And, you know, just from there, we, you know, work with the family, work with all members of the family. Of course, all the family members have to be in agreement to say, okay, we want to make this better. We want it to work, because God knows in many cases they're not interested in cooperating and they each go their own way, and then the business tends to not thrive. So we're very much on top of what families go through. And I did have one member, I love to share this, who said, gosh, if we could only learn to run our businesses with our heads and not our hearts, we'd be a lot more successful. So that's always stayed with me, and it's really the truth.
John Murphy and David Horwich help business owners think like business buyers. Here's some of the common things that they see out there.
We tend to find many of the same things. We look at management. We look at the financial foundation. How good are the numbers, both historically and in the future? We look at the growth. What we often find is business owners spend too much money on growth. They plant a lot of seeds, and they plant too many seeds because they don't take enough time sometimes up front to determine what are the criteria they should use to judge the seeds, so they kind of plant a lot.
Another common theme that's been running through a lot of our clients over the last year or so has been sales operations and sales strategy and sales operations and development. A lot of companies that we've been working with, they're stalled out in growth and they're not sure why. And what we have found in taking a good hard look at them is that they don't have a great sales strategy in place. So we help them assess that, put that in place, and then get it going.
Today's topic is about cost reduction, specifically LED lighting. Here's Chaz Dykes.
LED lights are something in the neighborhood of 70% more efficient. So it's a substantial, very significant savings. Whenever I explain our program of cost reduction through LED retrofit, people say, oh yeah, that's exactly like what they're doing with the solar panels. And I'll tell you what, it's really very, very different than that. What people fail to understand is that if you go with the solar projects for your house and you have the panels put on, you don't own those panels. The company owns those panels, and you're just leasing them.
Oh. That,
the company goes in and goes to the feds and to the local government and gets
credits.
All of those credits and all those rebates. They do. Under with my program, you own the lights, you get all of that savings in addition to the reduced cost.
Okay, so you're ready to start your exit plan. We asked for three quick tips from Stacy McKibben.
Get your number. What is it that you're retiring to or that you're working towards? Understand what that is. That'll help your team to be able to help you to work backwards from that. So know that number and be prepared. Two is look around at your team. Core values of a company are exuded and exemplified by their team. More often than not, the challenges that I see in profitability are due to the fact of lack of productivity by the team. Lastly is run your business like you drive your car. You look at your car with a dashboard, you would get in a car and you would make sure that you had enough gas, that there was no check engine light on. All of those same things apply in your business. Do you have a clear dashboard? Do you understand how to read it? You don't need to be an accountant, but you do need to understand what the numbers are, and that is the health radiant of a business.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
What are some of the factors that go into evaluating a business at any given time? We asked valuation expert Christopher Mercer.
It's one thing to say that your value is worth what a willing buyer and a willing seller will pay, but that same willing buyer and same willing seller won't pay the same thing in 2008 as they will in 2014, because in 2008 the world was full of uncertainty that caused financing to dry up, and it was enormously difficult to sell. Some of your listeners that are listening to this need to think about the fact that they need to be thinking of an orderly transition of management and ownership, because when bad things happen to your company, you lose all flexibility in terms of ownership and management transition. So take care of those things now while you can.
Being in business is inherently risky. We all know that. But what are some of the most common mistakes that business owners make and their potential solutions? We asked for comments from attorney Mayar Ghassemian.
One of the important mistakes is not having a corporation or LLC or another form of entity that would limit their liability in case they get sued. I have seen a lot of companies that do this, and it's very prevalent in the construction industry. If they are around for a while and they don't have an entity, they are going to be sued sometimes, especially in construction. And what happens is, and they put their own personal properties in danger because they don't have an entity that would protect them.
What are some of the important factors that go into a professional business valuation?
Hi, everyone. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, hey, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me once again today. It's always a pleasure to have you with me. You know, here we talk with advisors and authors and others about items that are of interest to baby boomer business owners, especially those that are contemplating their future exit or transition. Today, that can be a real challenge. So I'm pleased to have today as my guest, John Ferris, CEO of Envision Edge, a management consultancy focused on helping organizations innovate and grow. John has a mission to help leaders and organizations do great things, whatever their definition of greatness is. And John's a believer in the three elements of organizational transformation: strategy, innovation, and leadership. And he and his company focus on pragmatic tools, training, and coaching. John's motivated by getting results fast. And John, if we ever needed results fast, it's today. Thanks for joining me today.
No kidding, Bill. Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Hey, before I've given a little bit of an introduction for you, but before we get into it, tell us a little bit about you and your company and what you do at Envision Edge.
Yeah, well, our focus is really helping organizations achieve whatever their definition of value is. So we're basically value creators. We help organizations create value to the customers, value to the teams, value to the communities they serve. So that's focused. That's our sole focus at Envision Edge, and kind of develop some of the thinking and the methodologies that we apply throughout my career. I've worked with large organizations for quite a few years and went out on my own and started Envision Edge about 7 years ago. And I've been growing the company since. So I've applied the lessons learned in large organizations in transformation value creation. I've taken that and packaged that into providing services through Envision Edge to other organizations. So it's really the methodology of focusing on radically clarifying a strategy, focusing on innovation, developing new products, new services, and internal business methodologies, and focusing on leadership. That's the kind of the three areas of focus for value creation in organizations. So while we apply that to organizations that we serve, our customers and our clients, we also apply that methodology internally within Envision to help us create value. And I'm on a succession plan myself. I'm 57 years old and again, started Envision when I was 50. And we're looking at an exit plan for me over 7 years to move further out of the business, so I'm not involved in the day-to-day. Might still provide some overall coaching and guidance, but we're really on that focus right now of essentially my succession, putting leaders in place, systems and processes in place, so that their business is not reliant on me. So it's very much top of mind right now.
Yeah. Yeah, you and everyone that listens to this show, because that's all we talk about is, how do you start making yourself less important to the day-to-day so that you can do whatever it is that you want to do? And like you said, you help business owners figure out what their definition of success is. And that can vary from person to person and from company to company. So are the three areas that you just mentioned the three pillars of success that you build your planning around for accelerating innovation and growth?
Exactly right. Yeah, it starts with articulating the strategy, kind of why, the purpose, what your destination and direction is, and putting in the very specific and concrete steps that will help you create value. And that's step one, is creating that strategy. And then step two is putting in a methodology or system for innovation so that you and your team can, on an ongoing basis, develop new products, new services, and new business systems to service your customers. And then the third ingredient for value creation is leadership. And our job as leaders in organizations is to determine what's important and why is it important, and then let our teams execute on it. So that focus on leadership is really that key ingredient as well. But it's that kind of magic cocktail of strategy and innovation and leadership that helps basically create value in our organizations.
Yeah, so I think I'm pretty clear on, and I think our listeners would be, on what strategy is and hopefully what leadership is. Let's talk about the innovation side of things and how you help owners collaborate with their key employees and other constituents about innovation, especially these days. With everybody kind of working remotely, what are some of the tools of the day for communication and for brainstorming for innovation?
Yeah, so today, I mean, the challenge we're in today is really the tight cycles of innovation. Like, innovation typically is focusing on months or years out. Today, we're on the immediate challenges of developing new ways to run our businesses today, actually literally today and this week. So really the focus on innovation, and there's kind of key steps for making innovation happen. Number one is clearly articulating what the problem is that needs to be solved, because a lot of times we're working a lot and working very hard, but we're not solving the right problem. So step one of innovation is really figuring out what's the real problem we're solving. So within the last few months, the focus has really been on how are we going to focus on working remotely, because we're not working together as teams right now. So that, for example, is a very specific problem. So step one of innovation is defining with radical clarity what that problem is that we're solving. Step two is really creating what we would call meaningfully unique ideas, or ideas that create value. And instead of classic brainstorming, which we all have done at one form or fashion, we need to look at new ways to create ideas. And number one is bringing a group of people together. We can't create new ideas if there's just a few people together. So getting a diverse group of people, and today we're doing that through Zoom and we're doing it collaboratively, but bring in people from your team and maybe a customer or supplier, people from outside your organization, to generate new ideas around whatever that problem is that you've determined. And getting stimulus from other areas. So doing research, doing some searches on LinkedIn, for example, or business journals, to give you stimulus on how to solve the idea or the problem that you have, because a lot of people have already solved some of these problems, so go out and do some research, and then get your teams together to rapidly develop ideas to help solve the problem. And then once you've done that, once you've developed some ideas, or you've got some ideas that you'd like to get out there, then you rapidly test them. So you try a mini experiment or place a small bet on trying something. So you might be trying a new process or a new way of engaging with your customers or engaging with your teams. Try it out and you'll learn from it. You might fail, but if you fail, then you change it and you iterate quickly. So going through very fast cycles of learning, and these small experiments are so critical today, because we just don't know what's coming in front of us right now. We can't really control what's happening outside the walls of our organizations, but we can control what's happening inside the walls. So if we place these small bets and try new things as far as engaging with our customers or developing new products for our customers in these immediate times, or how we engage with our teams, we got to try those things out and rapidly test them. So those are the key elements of it. Define what the problem is, engage in getting people together and applying stimulus or new ideas within that team and then rapidly experimenting on what those ideas are as we move forward. So that's the high level. Those are really key, very concrete takeaways that we can focus on regarding innovation.
That's great. Yeah, that's, and I was wondering, like, in this day, this time right now, is it harder to get people to brainstorm if their brains are concerned or worried about survival stuff these days? And if so, do you have any tips for owners to help stimulate their employees maybe to come up with some ideas and to help them brainstorm? Especially, you know, it's one thing if you're looking eyeball to somebody and saying, hey, do you have any ideas, and playing off of each other. It's a little harder when you're remote.
No, absolutely. Well, you know, first of all, it's always good to do video conferencing using Zoom or what have you. So, you know, there's only so much you can do through phone and just through your voice. So highly recommend moving to a platform where you can actually see each other virtually. So that's step one, because you at least can have a connectivity and a relationship there. But stepping back, you know, high level answer to the question, first of all, as leaders, our job is to set the stage of the why. What's why are we doing what we're doing, and what is really important right now? So before you engage people in coming up with new ideas, you have to set the stage for it. And our job, even though we are in unpredictable times right now, we're not sure how long we're going to be in social isolation, for example. But our job is still to communicate to our teams and share the best knowledge that we have today. And at the end of the day, our focus is continuing on with our businesses, serving our mission, serving our purpose. And we have to continue to communicate with our employees about, you know, this is why we're here. This is what we're focusing on. And this is what's really important to us. So before you get into any type of idea generation, you need to put the direction out there, set the context as to why this is important. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, innovation won't happen unless you have a trust established within your team. So, you know, trust is established through good communication. It's through, you know, having a relationship with your team and just being open and honest. You know, you just have to be real with your team. And as you're, you know, hopefully you've done that before moving into these challenging times. And if you've done that, then you've created that environment of trust. And you've created an environment where people will more freely share ideas. But what I'm finding these days is there's rapid cycles of communication. We've got to communicate all the time with our teams. And doing that virtually is more of a challenge. We have to be more purposeful about it. So have a regular cadence or a regular rhythm of talking with our teams is really key. But once you do that and create that connectivity and the fact that, hey, we will carry on here. We have, you know, areas of focus that we need to work on with our customers, with our clients. Let's get back on this focus and get things done. But you have to create that environment of trust ahead of time before people will engage in generating new ideas. So that's our job as leaders. I mean, my job, we've been working remotely now this is our third week. Week one was all about team. You know, that's how we're going to do this. What's our rhythm of how often we're going to meet, how we're going to continue to form relationship virtually through Zoom, et cetera. But that's job one of any leader, is to create that, you know, I'm going to use the term security from a high level. At the end of the day, our job is to create some security with our team, even though there is uncertainty. But based on the current or the best information we have right now, we can certainly communicate with our team and share that information. So that's job one, is setting that relationship of trust. And then you can move into idea generation.
That makes a lot of sense, John. Thanks so much for filling us in on that. Tell us a little bit about your playbook Edge system, which is something that you've recently created, I guess, right?
Yeah. So our primary client base has been large, mid to large organizations. So we've done, you know, strategic planning for quite a number of years with large organizations across this country. And what we wanted to do is to provide a tool for smaller organizations so that they could essentially create their own strategic plan. So instead of, you know, consultants coming in and having to run strategy sessions with teams, we've basically packaged up our methodology and put it online, which is even more timely today since everything we're doing is online. So the Playbook Edge system is specifically designed for smaller organizations who want to create value and want to have a very specific roadmap in place as to how they're going to grow value in their company and how they're going to move the team forward. So it's a blended approach where there's some video instruction on how to run strategic planning. So it's very easy to follow instructions of how to do that. So in conjunction with that, we've established a tracking tool and a strategy execution tool that tracks your goals and tracks who's doing what and gets people engaged in your strategy. And there's also combined with that a coach. You have a strategy coach that helps you remotely, virtually, to make sure your goals and your objectives and your rhythm of execution is working well. So it's really an online strategy solution for smaller organizations so that they can do it themselves. And a lot of folks have been using it for succession planning. So if they know they have their window out there of 3, 5, 10 years, longer the better, obviously, then they load their succession plan into Playbook, and then they pull themselves out of the business on a regular basis to focus on what are these things that I need to do to make sure I'm continuously creating value in my organization and setting up the roadblocks to do that. But the Playbook Edge system can help out put that infrastructure in place. And there's kind of 5 building blocks to the Playbook Edge process or the strategy process. Step 1 is, you know, setting visualization. What's that destination? What's that end state look like for you as an entrepreneur, as a business owner? So step 1 is determining that end state. Step 2 is confronting reality. Take a look at your current business of where things are today, and our new reality has changed even over the last few weeks. But take a look at your current reality of your business, what's working, what's not working, what do you need to change, where are some of the blind spots, et cetera. So there's very specific tools that kind of help you through confronting reality. And then once you've done that, you put your plan design together, and it's a simple model of strategic planning. It's a law of 3 plan design, where you focus on what are the 3 big goals I must accomplish over this planning horizon, and then very specifically get into what are the actions you're going to take to achieve that. Because one of the challenges of a strategy, and as an entrepreneur myself, I tend to, you know, chase shiny objects a lot. You know, there's lots of opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the magic comes in distilling down what you're going to say no to and what you'll say yes to create value. So the Playbook Edge system will help you focus on those value creation activities, and it'll keep you focused on what needs to be done over time. And once you do that, then you move into setting up your rhythm. We call it a rhythm of accountability. What's that cadence mm-hmm. that you will use in your organization to pull yourself out of your day-to-day work that you're focusing on to focus on your business? So you'll determine very specifically how often you'll do it, when you're going to meet and talk about you working on your business versus in your business. So that's the Playbook Edge system. It's your do-it-yourself strategic planning tool that can help you create your strategy and more importantly, execute your strategy.
That sounds great. It sounds like, you know, what a lot of business owners really need is the framework and the accountability portion of it especially. So it sounds like a very valuable system, and certainly has been reviewed well by people that have used it. So, John, how do our listeners find out more about you and the Playbook Edge system? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so if people want to email me directly, you can love to chat. So my email is johnferris@envisionedge.com. So you can email me directly. I'm on LinkedIn. You can link up on LinkedIn, and you can message there. If you want to, we actually have a special offer for your folks on the show. And you can see some of the tools in Playbook Edge. And to access that, it's through our website, which is Envision Edge, InvisionEdge, edge.com, edge.com, / exit coach. And you can get some complimentary tools in there. So those would be the best ways to access it. And we can love to engage in a further conversation.
That's terrific. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and explain some of these great tips for our listeners who are, you know, facing great change right now. And I think you've been very helpful at helping them develop a framework. I know I took a page full of notes. Look forward to speaking with you again in the future and checking in with you again about how things are going with you and your business and the Playbook Edge system. And I hope our listeners will check in and get in touch with you and take advantage of that very, very nice offer of yours. Thank you so much.
Awesome, Bill. It's been a pleasure. Stay safe and well, and I look forward to the next opportunity to connect.
Thank you so much. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today. It's really a pleasure to have you with me. And my next guest is Cynthia Flynn. She's been, of course, with us many times before. But today we're going to talk about something special. Cynthia is a managing partner at Hackler Flynn & Associates in Pasadena, California, a terrific law firm that does a lot of great things for a lot of great business owners. And today we're going to talk about COVID-19 and how it's affecting business owners in particular. Cynthia, thanks so much for joining me once again today. I hope all is well with you.
Yes, thank you so much, Bill. It's great to be here.
You sound as fun as ever. So thanks a lot for joining me. Sounds like you're doing okay. Are you getting a lot of questions from business owners about how COVID-19 is going to affect their business?
We are getting bombarded with questions. I think every client we've ever had has come to us in the last 2 weeks for guidance on this and how to deal with this, whether it's, you know, the new sick leave policies or the expanded FMLA, or do I lay people off or do I furlough them? I mean, we are getting a lot of questions on this.
Oh, I would imagine. Yeah, and there's, you know, the government with its programs comes out with a ton of information, lays mm-hmm. it out on everybody, and then of course people are saying, "Well, I run a business. I run a manufacturing business or a service business. I don't understand all this stuff. I need some help interpreting this." Let's start with how are things at Hackler Flynn and Associates? How has your business been impacted by COVID-19, Cynthia?
You know, we've run a remote law firm since day one, so everyone was already set up just internally to work from home and have that social distancing. You know, they were always welcome to come into the office, of course, to meet clients or to work or to do depositions. But our firm has been, you know, essentially remote since day one. But it's our clients who are obviously very much being impacted. Said manufacturing companies, you know, they were wondering, well, am I essential? Am I not essential? I don't know where I fall in this. So it's been very, very busy over these last few weeks. But with so many businesses having to furlough people or lay them off, I mean, I imagine we'll see work start to dry up as well pretty soon.
Yes, hopefully not for very long. That's always the big mm-hmm. question. It's like in recessionary times, we always see layoffs and furloughs, but it all happens so quickly. And the question is, well, is this a V-shaped recovery that we're hopefully going to be looking at once we get the all clear signal? What are you seeing companies do more of, layoffs or furloughs right now?
You know, it's both. Labor Commissioner has said for purposes of issuing a final paycheck, it could be it's the same thing, that you need to pay your employees any accrued vacation time or any, you know, business-related expenses. So we're seeing that a lot. We are guiding clients on what furloughs look like as far as if they wanted to cut salaried, you know, employees down 25% and have them work a little bit less during the week. But then, you know, you have wage and hour issues sometimes if you do that. And we're just seeing both right now. You know, I thought originally it was going to be more furloughs, and now it's pretty much equal between the two.
Yeah, and to complicate matters more, of course, some of the government programs reward you for keeping employees on payroll, but the question is, will you mm-hmm. get money quick enough from them so that you don't go broke yourself? It makes for a lot of complication. And, you know, one of the things that's really come into play that I'm sure you deal with is the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. So that was signed into law, you know, a couple weeks ago, and it went into effect yesterday, actually, April 1st. And it is to help businesses with, well, first off, it applies to all employers with less than 500 employees. And then there's an exemption specifically for businesses with fewer than 50 employees. And The Department of Labor just clarified what that exemption is. You have to meet one of three things. One, that the paid sick leave costs would exceed available revenues and cause the business to cease operating. Two, absence of certain employees would entail a substantial risk to the financial health or operational capabilities of the small business because of their specialized skill, knowledge of the business, or responsibilities. And then three is there are not sufficient workers who are able, willing, and qualified, and who will be available at the time and place needed to perform labor or services provided by the employee or employees requesting paid sick leave or expanded family and medical leave, and these labor or services are needed for the small business to operate. So that's a big question I've been getting recently. Well, what is an exempt business? And then, of course, what it does is it modifies the Family Leave Act and it creates an Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act.
Okay, so how do employers decide whether or not they should what they should do with regards to that? Obviously, they call you, but is there some, would you prefer they read something first or get clear about it before they get in touch with your firm?
Probably, because the biggest thing I see clients wondering is whether or not California's stay-at-home order triggers FMLA, the expansion of FMLA and the Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act. And you know, you can use the Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act for specific reasons. So for one, for instance, is the government quarantine or isolation order. But our understanding is that, you know, California stay-at-home order is not the same as a government quarantine or isolation order. There are specific definitions to what quarantine means and what isolation means. And so even though we are on a blanket stay-at-home order, doesn't necessarily mean that your employees automatically qualify for the Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act. So there's a lot of nuances, but you can find out, you know, some great information on the Department of Labor website. They are addressing more and more questions and frequently asked questions. So that's been helpful. They've been updating that fairly regularly.
You know, it's all so complicated. We really need you at this point to be our interpreters as business owners. But one question I have is, you know, we've always heard that if you are going to terminate or lay off an employee, you have to have, you know, their final paycheck ready and all that kind of a thing. But of course, nowadays with so many employees working remotely, how do you handle that? What are some of the ways that employers are legally terminating people and taking care of things? Are they doing it by Zoom? Or, I mean, what's going on with layoffs?
Yeah, well, some companies have laid off their staff in an email. I think it's maybe a little cold. If you can do it via Zoom, if you have your employees working remotely, that is probably a better way to go. But like you mentioned, with that final paycheck, you want to make sure they get their final paycheck at the same time as of termination. And so when you have a work staff working remotely, you can't necessarily provide that. So our recommendation is like for today, for Thursday, if you plan on letting everyone go tomorrow, overnighting their checks to them today so that they get it tomorrow and you can have that conversation with them. And hopefully you can have it with them before the mail is delivered so it's not a complete shock, but that's what we recommend. Or if you go ahead and have that conversation with your staff today, that you overnight them and pay them in full for tomorrow as well.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, so a lot of planning has to go into effect, and you don't want to tell someone that they're laid off and miss their paycheck, even over a weekend, then you technically would have to pay them over the weekend. Isn't that right?
It depends on how, you know, your pay periods look. But if you have them typically work Saturdays or Sundays, then yes, definitely. And then you want to give them this. So if your typical work day or work week is Monday through Friday, or I guess technically Sunday through Saturday, and you terminate them on that Friday, then theoretically, yes, you should pay them also probably that Monday, so that you can overnight them that check and then they get it on Monday.
Okay. A lot to think about. Hey,
yeah.
Can you talk a little about the Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act? We didn't cover that in the other act, right? This is a whole different thing, right?
It is, yes. It still falls under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, but that is broken down into the expansion of FMLA, the FMLA modifications, and then the Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act. And what that allows for is for your full-time employees, they get 80 hours of paid sick leave. And for your part-time employees, it's the average number of hours worked over a two-week period. And this includes things like the government quarantine or isolation order, if someone specifically falls under that, or if it's doctor-advised self-quarantine, quarantined during COVID-19 symptoms. So that's really what's covered. It also includes caring for someone who's under the quarantine or isolation order, caring for a child due to school closure or child care closure. And it does not carry over from year to year. This is in addition to any leave program that an employer may already have in place. And one note, though, is that an employer cannot require that regular paid leave be used first. So some nuances
okay.
there. But honestly, Bill, the biggest question I'm getting from our clients is, oh my gosh, how am I going to pay for this? And I do want to note that there are some tax credits available under both the Family Medical Leave Act and the Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act. There's a credit for 100% of wages paid under this act against quarterly payroll taxes. And this credit cannot exceed the tax owed, but wages paid in excess of payroll taxes will be treated as a tax overpayment and refunded. So I think we're going to see some more guidance from the Department of Treasury, and then, of course, check with your CPA for more information. They can probably guide you through that aspect.
That's always good advice. And, you know, I think, again, back to some of these issues that I'm hearing about are that people see everything that's involved in the CARES Act. It all sounds great when it comes out, you know, on paper, but when people mm-hmm. really start digging into getting short-term, the loans and the programs and the packages that are available, it's really, really difficult to get through to, for instance, a bank about short-term funding and things along those lines. So people really have to be patient and just be persistent in getting some of these relief packages that are available through the government, and of course get good counsel and understand what, you know, make sure you're doing everything correctly. Now, Cynthia, if someone wants to furlough someone as opposed to lay mm-hmm. them off because they think, you know, mm-hmm. I think we'll get through this, is there a duration of time that they can do that for?
A furlough is typically 1 year or less. You know, whenever you're talking about reducing hours, you can do that with your hourly staff or your non-exempt staff fairly easily, right? You can just have them work less per week and then just not pay them for those, you know, hours, unless reporting time pay applies. But for your exempt employees who are entitled to a full salary, if you want them to, you know, reduce their number of hours worked, you want to be careful that that exempt salary that you're paying them does not fall below the minimum salary threshold in California. And right now that's $54,080 if you are over, if you are 26 or employees or more. So something to keep in mind. And then, of course,
okay.
if you're 25 employees or less, it's $49,920.
Now, back during the Great Recession of 2008, et cetera, there were state programs, were there not, that helped make up salaries of employees who were furloughed. Was that not the case?
Yes, and you know, right now, both a layoff and a furlough employee, assuming eligibility requirements are met, could entitle them to unemployment. So, you know, even a furloughed employee could be entitled to unemployment.
Now, that's something I didn't know. For partial unemployment or to the extent of their pay reduction, is that how that would work?
Yeah, exactly, yes. It would be some form of benefits, and I would encourage them to apply and then see what they get.
Perfect. That's great. That's good to know. And, of course, there's another kind of frustrating exercise is to try to get through, get some information on unemployment from the unemployment department. Forget it, because it's so crowded right now because of it's just got overwhelmed. So there again, that's perhaps something that people could get in touch with you and ask you some of these questions. Your job is to help people navigate some of these rough waters, and you do a great job with that. You're offering a free employment law checklist, are you not?
I am, yes. So any business owners who want to make sure they are buttoned up on the employment side, I'm happy to send you our checklist. And, you know, Bill, something else we're starting to put together is a coronavirus action plan, so that if or when really somebody in your team gets coronavirus, what you need to do as a business. So I'm happy to send that over as well to anyone who wants it.
Okay, how do our listeners take advantage of those offers?
So they can email me. My email address is Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y, at hacklerflynnlaw.com, and that's hacklerflynnlaw.com.
That's great. I really appreciate it.
That might be easier.
Or call the what's the best number for them to call for the office?
323-247-7030.
Terrific. Cindy, you always bring a ray of sunshine into a kind of a dark world here. You really help our listeners understand, you know, some of these areas are very complex, obviously. And, it's very nice that they can call your office, get in touch with you, receive the coronavirus action plan or the free employment law checklist. Terrific stuff for our listeners to use. And we encourage you, call Cindy Flynn at Hackler Flynn and Associates. Do not delay, because the longer you wait on some of these issues, the more it can cost you in pain and dollars. And you need to take advantage of some of these programs that are available and find out about them early on. So once again, Cindy, thank you so much for joining me today. It's really been a pleasure to talk with you, and I always look forward to when we have an interview.
Thank you, Bill. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, and thank you, listeners, for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to have you with me. We're going to move on to my next guest, who's joining us from Glenview, Illinois, Jeff Blackman. And Jeff is basically a Hall of Fame speaker, best-selling author, award-winning business growth specialist. And today we're going to talk about helping you to peak your profits, which is also the title of the new fifth edition of his best-selling book, Peak Your Profits. So, Jeff, thank you so much for joining me today, and welcome to the show.
Hey, my pleasure, Bill. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have speakers coming in from different parts of the country. We're here in California. You're in Illinois, and there's problems all over the country right now. But it's nice to be able to find out about strategies and ways for business owners to grow their businesses when they get that chance to sit back and learn about that. Tell us a little bit about you and your business and how you got into this world of helping people to grow their profits in their business.
Well, long before I chose to be a speaker or an author or a business growth specialist, I thought I would actually be an in-the-courtroom litigator. So I'm a lawyer. I've been a lawyer since 1982. The good news is I chose to never actually practice the law. So I am an attorney. sat for the bar exam, thankfully passed it the first time, and I actually renewed my license from 1982 through 1990 and then realized, wait a minute, I'm never going to make a penny practicing law. It's not going to be a plan B. I found my passion in 1982 when I decided not to practice the law. Background was also in broadcasting, both radio and TV. So I've done radio here in Chicago, and I've done television as well. And I started to combine really what were my loves, my passions, and my strengths in terms of speaking, training, consulting, writing. And I always tell clients that gravitate toward your strengths, gravitate toward your passion. Find people who are passionate about what they love to do and let them do their thing so you can do your thing to then complement it. When you find your passion and you pursue that with intention, then money is able to find you instead of the other way around.
Love it. Well, it's a happy person who has found their passion and found a way to implement that and make their living at that. When you work with business owners, what are the driving motivators for any decision maker that you work with?
You know, what's really interesting is that it does not matter the industry that I work in, and whether that's been true over the past year or for that matter the past 38 years since I've been in business, the driving motivators for every customer, client, or prospect are the same. And it's true of the clients that I serve as well as for those that they serve. And I always tell clients, Bill, they've got to first understand what those motivators are. And the first one is all anybody wants you to do for them is to improve their condition. That's their current state. They got a problem, solve it. They got a need, fill it. They got a dream or goal, help me realize it. So if you help them improve their condition, then you can move on to the second motivator, which is helping others attain a more favorable future. The reason that you have conducted well over 1,000 interviews with top advisors and authors is because your listeners want to improve their condition and they want to attain a more favorable future. So just before you and I hopped on together, I was listening to the final few minutes of your interview with Cindy in terms of her advice with respect to COVID-19 and a coronavirus action plan. Hey, that is a present problem. Improve my condition. Okay, so what's the game plan for the future with respect to whether it's unemployment, if I'm an independent contractor, what's the game plan in terms of what type of loan I might be able to get? That's going to help me attain a more favorable future. And most of my clients, when I start to work with them, really don't have an initial real understanding as to why someone is motivated to do business with them. They think it's about a product or a service or a solution. And I stress to them, it's not, because that's really about the is, which is the feature or the fact, and they need to focus on the does, which is the impact it's going to have with that condition or the more favorable future. Now, here's the good news. If you help others attain a more favorable future and improve their condition, then guess what, Bill? You do the exact same thing for yourself and the growth of your business. And that's how you peak your profits.
I love that. That's really clear. Makes a lot of sense. And it really helps to frame what a lot of this service work is really all about. You stress, I believe, the significance of asking great questions. Why is that?
Well, what's so interesting is whether I'm working with a client one-to-one, whether I'm working with their team in a keynote seminar workshop environment, most people, when I initially start to work with them, I'll ask them politely, how many of you have got what I call, Bill, a dynamic dozen? And they look at me like, what are you talking about, a dynamic dozen? Is this muffins? Is it cupcakes? Is it bagels? What do you mean a dynamic dozen? And I stress to folks that at a minimum, they should have a dynamic dozen or 12 open-ended need development questions. They begin with a who, a what, a when, a where, a why, a which, a how, a tell me more about, or even an E or a D, meaning explain to me how, describe for me. So one of the key things that I work on with folks is what is your dynamic dozen? Now, of course, you can develop far more than just 12 questions, which we encourage people to do. And they can have questions that are applicable to a different audience or decision maker, a different product or a service, a different industry or sales cycle, whatever it might be. but they really want to be able to deepen and strengthen the relationship based upon the questions that they ask as opposed to the statements they make. Most people will engage in what I call information overload. They will do these data dumps, and it's drivel, Bill. They think they're going to impress you with the number of clients they've served, how long they've been in business, and I tell my clients, that's a financial faux pas. It's a bottom line boo-boo. It's a business blunder. Nobody cares. They go, well, so what do I do? How do I tell my story, Jeff? And I go, you're going to be able to tell your story by asking terrific questions like, tell me more about some of the challenges that you're facing. What has brought you incredible success, yet lately it's not working? What are some of the things that your competitors are doing that you wish you would be able to do? And I actually ask clients this question, or their potential clients, is how are we going to measure success? What will you value most in the relationship that you'll have with me and Blackman and Associates? So I've got hundreds of questions. And if you'd like, I can even give something to your listeners right now if they'd like to take advantage of, and that's called the Sweet 16. So if your listeners would like, I'll give them a jump start to help them ask their dynamic dozen if they simply send an email to Cheryl at my office, that's S-H-E-R-Y-L, at jeffblackman.com. And in the subject line, Bill, all they got to put is Sweet 16, Bill Rocks. So when we see that, we know exactly where it came from. And then Cheryl will send them a jumpstart of initial Sweet 16 power probes that they can adapt or use immediately to be able to grow their business.
That's great. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. How do you know, Jeff, when you've asked a question that is peaked, that's worked for someone that you're talking with? Well, is there a telltale sign?
Yeah, what's really interesting is that initially I might get some folks who are resistant, and they don't want to answer questions. We'll just say, hey, Jeff, how can you help us? Check your calendar. Are you available on? And I say, that's premature. First, I've got to have a real understanding as to what your specific goals are and your desired outcomes. And then I let them know, i.e., if I'm talking, Bill, to a president or a business owner, whomever it might be, I say, hey, Bill, other business owners like you, one of the things that they really value is for us to truly determine the world's fastest strategic plan. And they go, what do you mean? I go, well, together, these questions will help us figure out where are you, where would you like to be, and then how do you want to get there? Then and only then can I begin to make really the best recommendations or result solutions to help you, your team, prosper and grow. So I stress to them, first, the rationale behind the questions is to help them. It ain't about me, it's about them. And when I get folks who are decision makers say to me, whoa, I've never been asked that before, or you're challenging me to think, that's good news. I want to challenge my clients to think. One of the greatest compliments that I've ever had, and that actually reoccurred last week, I'll take you back several decades. So I had a CEO years ago who said to me, you know, Blackman, one of the things that I really love about you and that I really dig in our relationship, and he was the CEO of a multi-billion dollar company who I had worked with for years, and he said, I love the fact that you never protect your butt and you never kiss mine. And that actually, Bill, was a supreme compliment. And his people cracked up because they knew what I was doing was challenging him. I didn't only challenge his people. And during a coaching session last week with a client that was done virtual, well, I've done virtual and video result sessions with clients for years. So we had the team together last week, and we're talking about accountability. And I said to the folks, I said, hey, ask your president as to whether or not I keep him accountable. And he said, he keeps me accountable too. He is a royal pain in the butt. And we all cracked up. And I went, well, that's the good news, is because his folks know I treat him the same way. That's actually one of the questions that I ask people, including CEOs, presidents, business owners. I say, hey, Bill, as we work together, how do you want me to share information and communicate with you? They go, what do you mean? I go, do you want to be honest or diplomatic? And they go, no, of course, be honest. So I never beat up anybody, but they know They will always get it straight from me, but they will never hear me say, let me be honest, to be honest. And during a coaching call with another client yesterday, she happened to sneak in about the first 10 minutes, three or four, to be honest, Jeff, let me be honest, honestly. And then I politely said to her, I said, do you realize how many times you said that? She goes, oh, my gosh. She said, in December you told me I need to keep working on that, and you mentioned it again in January. So it's a habit. So most people fall prey to their habits. One of the things that I attempt to do with really good questions is to get people out of their old habits to help them create new ones that are just more productive and more profitable for them.
Terrific. Today's marketplace has been called a price-driven marketplace. Everything's on the internet. Everybody wants to know how much, how much, how much. How do you create value in a price-driven marketplace?
Terrific question. And what's so interesting is so often I will have folks who will say to me, hey, Jeff, my business is a price-driven market. And I go, you are absolutely right. They go, what do you mean? I go, well, you just told me it's price-driven, so therefore it is. They go, well, what do I do to create value? I go, well, apparently you can't. You just told me that it doesn't matter. And they go, wait a minute, I didn't say that. I go, no, you did. So what I politely do is I challenge them to rethink what it is that they do and how they attack the marketplace. So with a couple of polite questions, I help them realize that, okay, in order to create value, the only way you really create value is to truly be able to understand what's of significance to your decision maker. Now, I'll share with your listeners a really simple question that will help create distinction, and this in itself creates value. So most people, Bill, in a competitive situation, if they find they're up against competitor A, B, or C, whomever it might be, what they attempt to do is, hey, let me tell you what makes us better than A, B, or C. That's actually a losing strategy. And the reason is pretty simple. Bill, you and I both know folks do not like to be told they're wrong, they made a bad decision, they obviously get really defensive. So instead, what I encourage my clients to do and the seminar or workshop participant to do is ask this simple question. What is it about our industry that really frustrates you? Now, what that question enables you to discover is that your decision maker will begin to reveal the frustrations they have with your competition. And they don't even necessarily, Bill, need to name the competitors. If you've done your research, you know who they are anyway. But as soon as they start to articulate those frustrations, what they're telling you is, find a way to eliminate this frustration. And every time with my clients, when I urge them to knock out the frustration, what they just also did is given themselves a distinct competitive advantage. And they've obviously created value. So you create value by, once again, helping someone solve a problem, fill a need, realize a dream or a goal, or we can now add to that list, eliminate a frustration. That's what really drives decisions. That's how you create value. And that's why I stress to people, find ways to become a partner, not a vendor. They go, why? What's the difference? I go, a vendor is expendable. A partner is invaluable. How do you choose to be positioned?
Excellent. Excellent tips there, Jeff. And it's really great talking with you about what you do and how you do it. A big question I would have now is, what's changing in your marketplace with, given the current state of things, are business owners looking for different outcomes today from you than they were, a month ago?
Well, the outcomes aren't different, but obviously the methodology to communicate them is different. So living here in Chicago, the state of Illinois, we really had our first quarantine or shelter in place effective mid-March, and it was supposed to go to the end of March, and now obviously it's going to the end of April, and as we continue to add more states, I think as of this morning, Bill, it's something like 38, 39 states that have already said, hey, stay put. So I'm not traveling. As a result of that, things that I would have done in person are now taking place via virtual or video result sessions, whether it's Skype or Zoom or GoTo meetings. But I've done that type of work with clients for years. There are actually some clients who physically I'm never with them, have never been with them. Ongoing work that we do has been through virtual sessions or via video. So the methodology has obviously changed significantly, and it requires adaptation, the likes of which we could never imagine. My dad, who passed away in February of last year, that was a very successful CPA and a lawyer. And he had a pretty simple saying, and that is that life is a series of adjustments. So this COVID-19 has proven to us that life is a continual series of adjustments. In early March, our eldest daughter, Brittany, and I spent daddy-daughter time together. And I said to her, hey, this might be our last daddy-daughter day before you actually become Mrs. Schwartz instead of Brittany Blackman, because she was scheduled to get married on April the 18th. And she said to me in early March, Dad, do you think the wedding will be canceled because of what's now just starting with this virus? I said, honey, we don't know. Time will tell. Well, obviously, her wedding has been postponed. We don't know when. Likely at the end of 2020, but who knows? And that's really part of the enemy that we're battling here, Bill, is that it's this invisible enemy, and it's hard to determine what might happen, which is why with those clients who I continue to serve, whether it's via video conference or over the telephone, I continually stress to them, do not worry about things you can't control. What can you control? And in a recent video session where we had the entire team together, I said, let's focus on all the things you cannot control. And we made a list. And then I said, now let's make a list of all the things that you can control. Which list is longer? And the list, which was longer, was actually the things they can control. I said, that's where we're going to spend our time. That's where we'll focus, because that you can influence. The other stuff, do not worry about it, because you can't control it. Be vigilant, stay healthy, stay safe. If appropriate, stay home. Focus on what you can control.
That's great. That's a great exercise. It sounds like something a lot of our listeners could use to communicate with their employees and help them figure out, you know, not only what their work life looks like, but how they can take control of their personal lives as well. You have a book out called Peak Your Profits. Tell us a little bit about your book, and I know our listeners can get it on Amazon, but tell us about it, Peak Your Profits.
So Peak Your Profits, the new edition, which is the fifth edition, is one of five books that I've written. If folks go to Amazon, they'd also see one of my other books, which is kind of one of the two great big how-to books, one of them being Stop Whining, Start Selling, and that was originally published by John Wiley. And then Peak Your Profits, now in its fifth edition, was published by NetWorlding. And the reason that's in its fifth edition is because when NetWorlding said, hey, Jeff, love it, let's update it, I realized the best place to start was not merely an update, but to really start from the beginning. So I truly rewrote the book, and I bet you probably 40 to 50% of the book is brand new content. So the title is Peak Your Profits. The subtitle is The Explosive Business Growth System. And what clients and readers have told me for years is that it does enable them to outsell and outserve and out-market, and out-negotiate their competition. So we take all of those key business growth skills, put it all into one book in terms of selling, serving, negotiating, marketing. You put all those skills together that will enable you to peak your profits as long as you first focus on what's important to your decision maker. They come first. That's what really drives what I call relationship power, which is the little r, which is your humanity and sincerity and courtesy and dignity, and that's always in play. But then you got to have big R, Bill, and that's the ability to be a business growth specialist. So how do you help others maximize gain and minimize loss, improve performance, productivity, and profitability? And you need both. So you need to be a wonderful human being who's also focused on helping someone grow, either at the personal or the professional level. And that's why, you know, from what I've been told, that the book's been so successful over these years is because it really gives people immediate how-to strategies. And folks who know me real well, whether friends or clients, will say, hey, JB, which is what most folks call me, they go, I read your book and I thought you were sitting next to me reading it out loud to me, because I write just the way that I talk. So it's friendly and focusy and conversational, but it's real how-to, immediately implementable advice.
Great stuff, Jeff. And so for our listeners, remember, Peak Your Profits, remember to email in Sweet 16, and don't forget the Bill Rocks part. And hey, and you can do that to Cheryl, Sheryl, at jeffblackman.com. Check out Jeff's website, jeffblackman.com. Jeff, I also note that you are a Vistage speaker, which I'm also a member of that great organization. So if you're a Vistage member or chair and you're listening, have Jeff talk to your group virtually, in person, whatever, however you can get him in there. Jeff, I really want to thank you for joining me today. It's great tips. I took a whole page full of notes. I hope our listeners did too. And I look forward to having you back, because these first interviews, we just barely scratched the surface, but I really enjoyed what I've heard today. Thank you so much.
Bill, the pleasure's mine. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this. Please stay with us.
Hey everybody, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. One of the questions I get asked the most is, how do I grow the value of my business? I'm so busy working in it, I need to work on it. So we've created a special report for you on 10 tips to grow the value of your business. Just text the word DRIVERS to 44222 to get a special free report right to your inbox. That's DRIVERS to 44222. Text DRIVERS to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now, because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on exitcoachradio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.